Welcome to Big Blend Radio with your hosts, Lisa and Nancy, editors of BigBlendMagazine.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Big Blend Radio with Nancy and Lisa. So we're very excited today. We've got our friend Marie Sutro back on the show. We first met her in January 2017 with her book, Dark Associations. Her book had just come out and I loved it. And we talked about Juan Bautista de Anza's expedition from Tucson, where we were at the time, all the way up to San Francisco. And the book has got some of that in there. And we had a really cool conversation, and I really loved the book, Dark Associations. And it has won some awards. She's kicked butt with it, which is really awesome. And we're excited because her second book in the series, Dark Obsessions, is out. And Nancy's the one who's been reading this. Mm-hmm. And she keeps running out. And it's all, you know, Kate Barnes is the main character there. I refuse to say protagonist, even though I just said it. Nancy keeps running out doing what I did with your book, Marie, going, she's so good. And this happened. She's so good. I'm like, I told you. So I'll get to have a treat and read it soon, but welcome back. How are you?
I am doing well. Thank you so much for having me back.
Hey, this is so cool. And Nancy, awesome. You are like, you're not allowed to spill the beans, but you're loving
it. I know. So it's so hard when you talk about these kind of books, murder mysteries, when you want to say everything because you just want to be the one who tells.
yes. Well, it's the last one. You've got the detective Kate Barnes, and she was going after the tower torturer. What is she doing now? Who's she going after?
Well, as you can imagine, going up, you know, she's a rookie detective when she goes up against the tower torturer. And this book finds her very, very quickly after the last one ends. Mm-hmm. And she is carrying a lot of trauma. And that trauma from the case brought out a lot of things in her past, old wounds that need to be healed. So Kate is going up to Washington State, specifically the Olympic Peninsula, to seek out her mother and try to put some of that to rest and try to address some of the stuff that she had just kind of shoved in the closet, but didn't really organize before she slammed the door on it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. So now she's in the Pacific Northwest and then things start to happen there too, even though she's taking time out. So basically she's not getting a break.
She is not getting a break. There is a body that is discovered. And unfortunately, once you've been on a case like that and everybody in the world has seen your face, local law enforcement quickly says, wow, she might be a good person to ask for help. So they do. And if you know anything about Kate, you know, it's very hard for her to pass up helping people.
Yeah, exactly. And this is all in the Pacific Northwest, with Nancy and I today recording you while we're in Eugene, Oregon, taking care of Jesse the pup, who may bark at any time and say hello. But we were in Ilwaco. If we're saying this Ilwaco, everybody's in a different way. Or Ilwaco. Ilwaco, Washington and Waco. Long Island Peninsula, Lewis and Clark territory. And I knew you were coming on the show. And I'm like, you know, we're looking in some areas, there's like, you know, it's meadows, but it can look swampy. And I'm, because it's rainforesty. And I'm going, Marie, what are you doing with dead bodies out here? Like, this is almost like Louisiana stuff in a way, like swampy. And then I'm thinking dead bodies. And do bald eagles eat dead bodies? Like, you know.
it's really interesting because there's so many little kind of microclimates as you go down a road, right? You'll find this gorgeous mountain meadow, and then you come to this really dense forest, and then you'll come to a, you know, like you said, more of that typical northwestern rainforest that's a little more lush and maybe not as dark, and there's more of the large ferns and things low lying, right? So yeah, there's so much diversity. And then obviously when you head out to the coast, it's a different vibe there, because in some areas the forest goes right up to the Pacific, and in other places it slowly bleeds off and then hits the ocean. So really, really fun and diverse areas geographically.
Yeah, because there's ocean with mountains with snow, and I'm going, this is messed up, man. It's beautiful though. I mean, but I'm going, I don't think I've seen the ocean and snow at the same time. I don't know. I can't remember. I mean, we're from, you know,
most
of the time in Africa. Yeah, I don't remember. But yeah, I mean, so what led you to go to the Pacific Northwest from the Bay Area, other than, okay, she wants to go to her mom, but for you as the writer, what led you to do that as the setting?
Well, it was interesting because I knew I wanted to challenge her. And, you know, when you look as a writer at a series and you say, how do I want to tie the series together? What are the main arcs that carry throughout the books? And I knew obviously Kate and her journey is a big part of it. So I thought, what better way to challenge her than to take her away? You know, she still is a rookie detective. She's really cut her teeth on this last case, but to take her away from her entire support structure professionally is an interesting dynamic. And then to, you know, she's kind of a solitary person, but when you're in the hustle and bustle of the big city, you're moving all the time. Your mind's racing all the time. As you ladies know, when you go out to these places, even if you're going to see someone or you're doing something, there's a different level of introspection when you're in forest and you're out in some of these remote areas. So for me, it was really, how do I challenge her professionally and personally? And that's kind of where it came from. And it was funny because originally I was thinking, oh, I'll just do this in Seattle, right? It's very analogous to San Francisco. There's a big body of water, there's hills, there's Victorians on the hills in some areas, right? But then the more I thought about it, I realized, no, she needs to be quiet in ways, and she needs to be challenged for resources. She needs to be challenged emotionally in so many different ways.
Marie, you're so mean.
Yeah.
I'm kidding. But I mean, it's like, yeah, it's like, okay, I'm going to do this. You know, so Nancy, did you enjoy this part of it? Like, the girl's not getting a break.
Well, she's tough. Mm. So in a way, you already know she's tough. So the challenges are there, but you look at different ways of how she handles different challenges, you know, and so sometimes I look and I'm like, okay, on the work front, she's really good. On the personal relationship front, well, maybe, oh, and then it changes up. You're like, oh, well, wait, just, okay. You know, so she's pretty real as a person because, you know, everybody has a good day and bad days. So, and everybody's got a little chink in the armor somewhere. So she's very human, which is what I like about her. So she's believable, but she's a badass.
Thank you. That's really what I was going for, was believable badass.
She's a believable badass.
Yeah, because you can't be, you have to be strong. Yeah.
Because when you think from a woman or female perspective, looking at dead bodies and trying to figure out who did what, going into places where you wouldn't normally go as a woman, she's pretty badass.
I remember now, like going back to dark associations of her seeing the dead body and gagging, and now, you know. So I want to know, Nancy, you reading this, because I read the first one and I've definitely got to read Dark Obsessions. I mean, I think I read your book overnight or something. I remember not going.
Well, it is a page turner.
Yeah, that's what Nancy's like. This is a real page turner. I'm like, I know. So I wanted to know, like, because you came in on the second book. Do you want to read the first book, or
does
it stand alone good enough for people to just go get it?
No, I believe it stands alone, but I would read the first one, absolutely.
Mm. See, I'll just bring you on the show so I can interview Nancy about your book.
Yes.
No, I appreciate Nancy saying it, because my perception, for me to tell you, oh, I think it is a standalone, versus someone who truly, you know, I can try to look at it and put up barriers in my mind and say, well, I think I gave enough. And I'll tell you, I really thank you for saying that, Nancy, because one of the things I grappled with was in the opening chapter, how much information do I give? Because I don't want to bore people, because if I go back and try to tell you an entire story in one chapter, you can say, oh, this lady's crazy.
No, you did a good job there, because I could tell that, well, that was a big case that she just got off of. And, but you didn't go on and now you're telling that story and then this one.
Yeah. And it's got to not be too much for someone who's, you know, like for me, it's good to have that refresher. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like having a trailer, mm-hmm. you know, for, what you missed in this last episode you want to see. But
no, it works.
I don't want to have to relive the whole other first book too. So for someone who's following your craft, you know, and your stories. So is this going to be like another one coming? I mean, have you got a lot down the pipeline, like as a full-on series?
Well, she, Kate is with me. We're currently working on a third Kate book. Cool. She's giving me her input right now.
She says, keep, make sure I'm still a badass.
I know it. That's always at the forefront for her. And it can be a challenge, you know, over time. How do you continue to grow her as a person and not lose those sides of her that, as Nancy pointed out so well, are human flaws. Mm-hmm. Want to see her grow, but at the same time, she needs to remain human. She can't become Superman, you know, that whole thing in the comics where they say, well, people get bored of Superman because he can do everything. He's just
perfect, right? Which means he actually does nothing. Oh, right. Superman, sorry.
Don't show him some Mercury.
But it's true, because you can identify with her. And then if you can identify with a character in a book, then you feel what they're feeling, mm-hmm. which makes the book come alive. If you don't identify, like if it's so over the moon and you can't identify with the characters, then the book loses something. Mm-hmm. You know, and your books are character driven. I'm going to go out there and say that, because it's about what people do to other people when nobody's looking, or they think no one's looking.
I love that line. That's exactly, you reached right into my brain and pulled it out, Nancy. Thank you.
Yeah, there you go. See, I got superpowers.
She does. This is so cool. So going dark associations. So that one, you won the IBPA Benjamin Franklin Award for Best New Voice in Fiction. How did that feel, winning the award and now going to the next one? Are you allowed to like apply for a second prize?
Well,
dip.
Well, it's funny. Each book, you know, is judged on its own merit each time you have a release. So I think that, you know, for me, I just had this goal that if I could get one person who I didn't know just to read my book, and actually go through the looking glass and feel that they were in that story, that Kate was real, that all the other characters were real, and truly get out of whatever was going on in their life at the moment. And that was my goal originally. If I could just do that, just get the one person. And so when the award came, that blew me away. I still don't even know what to say about it.
I think you got more than one.
Yeah, because you got
more than one person.
you connect with the characters so fast with your writing, and then you're in the situation, and then it's you know, mystery, and to keep the page turning and not let it slow down, and but still have dynamics so your reader can catch up, you know, breathe a little bit and still connect. It's a big job to do, and it's visual, and it's kind of like movie paced, you know what I mean, with what you're doing. So I think that's a hard work to do. You know, it does take time. Is that why it's taken 5 years for you to come back?
That's an interesting one, Lisa, because I was able to finish my first book much quicker. Mm. And life changed drastically between when I wrote my first book and this second book. First of all, I moved twice, which is, as we know, always a fun challenge. Yeah. And then unfortunately, I had some family members that became ill, and then there were some end of life scenarios.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it was just, you know how we all kind of have those times where like one thing after another type of thing. And then, and then there was this thing called a global pandemic. And
I know. What the hell was that?
I don't know. I'm so bored with it.
I know. Like, get on with it. We don't want it anymore. Really, but it's still, it's like a Klingon, man. It just keeps.
Yeah, dudes.
Just saying.
It is painful. And it really impacted when we look at, you know, just the basic whole you know, logistics and distribution chains of how you get products here and there. Mm-hmm. It impacted printers. It impacted so many people. And
the bookstores. I mean, everybody.
Yeah. It really turned things upside down. So even now it's interesting trying to release a book because not everybody, you know, some people are like, wow, I want to go out. I'm going to go do this and that. And other people are still kind of hanging back, not sure if they feel comfortable. And so it's a very different world to release a book than it was when I first.
Yeah. But then there's all like, I remember right before it was like 2018, 19, when we were on the road. I think we talked to you right before we hit the road again, like full time again, because we just stopped in Tucson for a couple years because we had to redo everything. And now we have to do it again, but whatever, because it keeps changing. But I remember telling people, oh, we need to do things on Zoom because we can all see each other and, you know, all the tourism destinations we cover. And I spent more time trying to teach people and I didn't have time to teach people. And then the pandemic came and now people understand Zoom. And I'm like, well, this is cool. Thanks for doing my job. You know, yet you are able in some ways, like musicians in some way, which sucked for musicians for sure. But we're able to live stream and connect with audiences that may not have been able to. And I think the same for authors. In some ways, it sucks because you couldn't just go to your local bookstore and do it, you know, or even do a book tour. But then there was the virtual world.
Which is big.
But to make it work is so much scramble. You know, it's a lot of work to do. I mean, I think the marketing part is just as tedious as writing a book.
It is. It's hard work.
Isn't it kind of hard to just, because you want to be at your desk and cozy and, you know, coffee and my writing.
It's interesting because it does take away the time. And just on a weekly basis, you know, that whole author thing of, you know, how many words did I get this week, right? And then looking back and saying, oh, geez, I really did nothing this week. Really never even touched my laptop. It's horrible.
Well, yeah, we have a hard time because even just, you know, we'll do radio interviews and shows or, you know, you're talking to people or business meetings and then it's like, go write your article. And I'm like, dude, I'm done. I'm like,
yeah, it's hard to do the in and out. We call it the in and the out. Mm-hmm. Like you have the one company that when we used to work for other people a long time ago, there was the outdoor salesman and the indoor people who worked inside, and when the outdoor people came in, the indoor people were like, oh god, not them,
get out,
they're all loud and la la la, and the indoor people, oh man, no, you know. So when you're trying to do a job like what you're doing, okay, the indoor part you're writing, the outdoor is now you got to go market. So it's all in your brain at one time.
It is all in your brain. And it's funny because, you know, sometimes you just feel like, wait, is there a me? Is there a me somewhere?
Where are you?
I know there's the business side and I know there's the author side, but was there ever a me?
Because
and then your character side. Yeah. Does your character talk to you too and start dictating like, hello, I'd like this to happen now. Can you go write this? You know, it may be 2 a.m, but get up and go do that.
Your character told me that she would like to go to China and find out who let the pandemic out of the test tube.
Who let the pandemic out?
Who let
the bats out?
And it's funny you bring that up, Nancy, because that was one of the big questions for me when I was working on the book. Obviously, I wasn't ready to release it when the pandemic hit, or I was hoping to release it, but then things started changing drastically. Sure. But one of the things that was really, really, really interesting for me was, do I address the pandemic? And, you know, do I work it into the story? And I decided that I didn't want to because I couldn't, that was my escape to write the story. I couldn't take that in that world at the time. It was a safe place to go to be away from the pandemic. And I thought, I want people to go somewhere that they could be away from the pandemic.
Well, it's a bit soon too, because we don't know the be all end all of everything.
That's you'd just have to write about mutations.
Yeah.
This is mutated. Well, that's an interesting thing too to write, because I mean, at one point, I remember, you know, it was right when we started the shows, like it was like 15 years ago, reading a book and some novelist had suddenly put like, oh yeah, and it was a mystery. And I think the character hooked up with an old boyfriend through Facebook. And I'm like, wow, here it is, the beginning of social media being in books, because at that point, Facebook was new, Twitter was new. And it was like, and who knows what's going to happen with either one at this point.
Well, right now, so, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, maybe Elon Musk will buy Facebook and then Bezos can buy Twitter and then Zuckerberg can start Snapchat. I don't know, but just for the fun of it.
But, I want to know, you know, are they Chinese?
But there's those things of social media coming in and into the play. I remember cell phones suddenly going from, you know, books had people with beepers and internet. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so there's this time of like, okay, where is it? Is it a fad? Is it a trend? Is it for real?
Yeah.
You know, so that's an interesting thing for authors.
Mm-hmm. It's hard from so in so many ways, because not only is that happening in our day-to-day lives with technology, but it's also happening with forensic technology. Mm-hmm. Forensic technology is changing so much. So, you know, you have this whole world of genealogical DNA now, and you have touch DNA. Mm-hmm. And if you have a book from 10 years ago, it doesn't have that in there. But if somebody picks it up today, they say, well, gee, why didn't they just run this or run that?
Yeah.
It's true. It's really interesting how things change over time.
Oh, wow. That's a good point, Yeah.
And things change a lot faster now than what they did 50 years ago.
So Kate has to keep in school, literally, like keep learning new technology and new forensics and new. And so you have to as well. So you get to geek out. Do you like geeking out on that?
I don't mind it. You know, before I came at the whole author world, I was a little nervous to be an artist. So in college, I went to business school, got a bachelor's degree, and then ended up with a master's in finance because I was afraid I might not be able to pay my bills with art. So I went the tried and true path. And during that process, I learned a lot about research and, you know, how you really dig in. And you know, I'm kind of a geek, so I like to do research, oddly. I go down all sorts of rabbit holes and I have to stop myself and say, wait a minute, do we have what we need? If we have what we need, we have to stop. So, and I love it because sometimes you go down and you're looking for one thing and you find something totally different that takes the story in another direction. So
I like that.
That is the creative spark of how it just happens and you don't plan it. And it's like, oh, well, detour, cool. You know, that's neat. Are you still involved with the Sisters in Crime?
Yes, I am. Actually, I just finished up in December. I finished up a term serving on the board of my local chapter. And as I might have told you before, I love that organization. They provide great resources to writers. They're always encouraging lesser known voices, doing everything that they can to get as many voices heard in the genre. And again, the networking and everything, it's a wonderful organization.
We did a series all last year from January through December, a monthly Tucson Sisters in Crime with the authors from Tucson. And I was thinking
of
you on it. And our friend Eva Eldridge is the one who set it up. And she's like, she was kind of, you know, she was on the shows and everything, but she wanted to see our reaction. And honestly, I was mind blown about one author was writing, because she's talk about geeking out. She's like a science, like bacteria person, like all of that geek. I can't even say the name of what she does, a virologist or, you know, that kind of thing. So her series is she's taking the whole alphabet. And the first thing was, what do you call it? Anthrax. And she's going to end up doing COVID. So each book was the killer is the bacteria, and she's coming from a climate change side too, going, we're going to have more of these things happen as climate change happens. So then there was geologists who were geologists in the field, and then how that ties into murders. And I'm looking at these women killing people, you know, and it is funny. Even, you know, as we travel because of COVID, we ended up pet sitting along the way. That's why people sometimes you hear dogs, chickens, turkeys, soon to be a donkey coming through. you never know. So sorry, but that's the way we work, and we get to play with animals and be normal for a little bit. But we've met so many writers through that. And one of the ladies we sat for her and her husband, old doggy Millie and all these cats, she turns out she's also a murder writer, like murder mystery. And she kills her husband. And I'm like, every time I read any of her books, I'm like, she's killing the husband again. And he goes, I know, I'm getting killed all the time. And I'm like, but she is the sweetest lady,
the best grandmother,
and so sweet. She's like, come have some cookies. And I'm like, are you going to kill me? The cookies? She's killing people. What is it about women killing people?
It's an interesting thing because there's a lot of, kind of science that's been done around it where people have tried to understand why are women so drawn to crime thrillers? If you look at even in the TV world, originally you had things like 48 Hours, 2020 or Dateline. Now you have ID Network, Oxygen Network, where 24/7, it's true crime, right? And so you really look at that, so many people have studied it from different angles. But the one thing that's interesting is that when you look at who's committing the most violent crimes, there are women who kill and there are women who commit violent crimes, but overall it does lean towards males committing violent crime in society. So it's a very fascinating thing because when you look at that perspective and you say, well, some people have said, are women drawn to this because they want to understand it because they know inherently they could be a victim of it?
Yeah.
There's one school of thought on that. There's other schools of thought that just say people are voyeuristic. I don't tend to believe that because I think then why is it so predominantly the female gender? And the female gender that's known for maternal instincts and a lot of these other things. Yes, right. there are outliers, especially these women who commit these crimes. But by and large, it's not what you typically think of, right? Mm. When you think of, what's a female perspective in any which way, shape, or form. So, I definitely think that there's a lot out there about it. But I probably tend to think that women want to understand.
I think Google history must be really quite interesting.
Yeah, really. If you ever got in trouble with the law, they'd be looking at your computer and going, oh boy, this is take her in.
I know, and I always say, please, I beg my husband to take care of himself. Please outlive me. I'm always trying to make sure he's eating right and working out. Because if this man dies before me, I will be dead. We just know it.
So much trouble.
I
was just going to say that women seem to like poison. Choice of...
And manipulation. They're good at plotting and organizing.
They're good at getting somebody else to do the dirty work, for sure.
Yeah.
But I think if they were going to murder, that the first choice would be poison.
Yeah, it's interesting when you break it down like that, Nancy, what methods women use versus men, and what do they go to? And, I am a big crime geek, not just with my writing and my work, but I like puzzles and obviously with my family history, I've always been interested and fascinated by it. And when I watch these shows, you're right, there's so many where let me get my lover, kill my husband, or I'm done with my lover, I want him to go away, so I'll tell my husband that this guy's, whatever.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's it's crazy because there's actual real true crime that we've done interviews on where like the mom's on the show and her daughter's murdered the lover. I mean, and it was just like this young sweet girl everybody thought was nice and then just snapped and that was that, and it's like oopsie, but someone died over it and now she's in prison. And we've done interviews where women have ended up in crime, but it's because of their childhood and trauma and just maybe growing up where their parents were drug addicts or abusers or and it really depends on that and how women end up in crime. And it's not understood as it's people there's we need more empathy of why women are in jail. Like there's a lot more women in jail in prison now than ever. I mean, it's pretty incredible. So it's an interesting thing, but I also think what's great about your books is you've got Kate And we do need more women detectives. I know we've got CSI and all that stuff too, but I think when people read, and for women to read that, hey, you know, this has always been the man's job. Like, you know, she has to go out there and be the badass and still have that healthy dose of fear. So you have to balance the fear and the badassery. And yet if you don't have your fear, somebody will badass you. You know what I mean? So I think that's neat with what you're doing for women to read and for men to read, to connect to the female character from a book standpoint, because it's more, reading is very personal.
It is, and it's funny. One of the nicest compliments I received after Dark Associations came out was a gentleman, I was doing an interview, and he said, you know, one of the really fun things that I liked about your book was I couldn't tell who you were. I didn't know if you were a man or a woman.
Oh, he said, because, as a writer. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's, and he said, cool. I couldn't tell the way you wrote men and the way you wrote women.
Oh yeah.
It seemed like it was a male perspective of women or a female perspective of men.
Good point.
And so I really, really loved that, because that is one of the big things. I don't want to necessarily color my characters one way or another. I mean, they need to be colorful, right? But as the narrator, I don't want to necessarily superimpose my experience. And I try to be very empathetic to what is it like for, you know, for everybody? What is it like being even the horrible killer? Why is it the way he is, right?
Yeah.
So you can just go down rabbit holes with all of this.
Oh, stuff. Yeah, you can.
Yeah, but it's interesting too, because think about all the writers who have taken pen names, like men have suddenly they're writing under a woman's name and vice versa. Like, I wonder how much of that is done on purpose. You know, look at Sidney Sheldon too. Like, come on. Like, and then you're thinking that, or maybe a female wrote this or a male wrote this because of their name. And you don't know. And is that why so many authors don't give their full first name too? They just go,
well, I would say
this, or
in my case, I understand there's probably, especially when you're writing darker stuff, probably a lot of people want to just have a little arm's length there.
because
for some reason, I think sometimes people think that, are you your villain? Are you your main character?
Yeah. Right? Are you talking about yourself?
Yes, exactly. So,
and then are you going to write about me now because you've met us? Now you're going to.
You know, you've heard this before. But yeah, that's what happened.
You looked at my Google history. Don't look at mine either.
But it's funny though, because people sometimes they hear you're a writer and then they hear what you write and they kind of look at you a little strange, you know, like, especially if they don't like that genre. They'll think all sorts of things about why you want to write things or extrapolate who you are.
I know a lot of writers who write some stuff that I'm like, I would never think that about you. Like, where does that come from? Like, that's cool, but I find that cool. Like, to me, and for some reason, there are so many lawyers writing fiction, fantasy fiction, mystery, a lot of historical fiction coming out of lawyers. So I find that really interesting how.
Well, they're good with words.
Because I think they're good with words. They have to be.
They're
always doing the devil's advocate. So there's always these two dueling sides of what's the right. They're always playing justice, man.
And it's funny to see that, you know, sometimes play out in people's work. And it is funny, I will say, you know, there's themes that play out, you know, themes you want to address. And sometimes people will extrapolate from that. Do you have problems with loyalty, or do you have, no, I just think it's a good topic to bring up.
Yeah. But, you know. Yeah. See, that's it. Yeah. And if you had, like, if Kate was a slut, then people would look at you going, gee, I thought you were happily married. What was going on with you?
Exactly.
You know, it's like, it's a very, And so that means you have to have more than one computer.
Yes, it does. It does.
Well, and it's interesting because when you're writing a book, as opposed to actresses and actors on TV or in the movies, people know they're acting, but they still get brought into the film. So when they say somebody's typecast, And so they're playing the same character over and over when they want to move on to something new. It's not that easy because everybody's, I'm sorry, you're this. You can't be over there doing that because you're this. Mm. So it's hard if you do, if you're an actor, actress in television that has a weekly series, you get typecast a lot faster than somebody that's in a movie.
Mm. And it's interesting you say that because it happens to authors. One mm-hmm. of the reasons, you know, certain authors have, I've met authors that have four pen names. Yeah. Because this pen name is romance and this pen name is sci-fi and this, you know, mm-hmm.
and
people have an expectation.
I understand that. Yeah.
You're a sci-fi writer. You're not going to be able to write romance or you're not going to be
exactly.
able to write thrillers. And
see, we have a hard time. Yeah. Right. See, we're the blend and people didn't understand that concept. Now we have to have different magazines
exactly. you know,
as we grow, but we are able to do multiple things, but it's so funny yeah. how we as human beings do this pigeonholing, put it in a box and it must be, it's like, we're almost computer brain and like, it's a binary thing. Like put it in here. It must look exactly. That's why
like
we like packaging
and,
on yeah. everything.
And
right?
don't it's do anything very, different.
And, it's
no, and that's,
yeah.
yeah and that's, we expect people when they're 18 years old to choose a career and we expect them to stick with it.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Not allowed to have the second, third.
Because,
oh
and then
God.
It's like, but you said you wanted to be a chef. Well, you
I'm
tried it and you didn't like it.
Now. And it's funny because the other thing that's changed so drastically in my lifetime, I remember seeing what life was like for my grandparents mm-hmm. and there was a societal approach that once you reached a certain age, you were retired mm-hmm. and then you just kind of sat in your home or maybe cruised in an RV and that was it.
What
and
do you
do? Do anything else, right?
Yeah, no, you can't not
listen.
Do something.
I you know, this whole thing, like it was, everybody retires.
Mm-hmm.
This is, I'm sorry, that's the worst time to start driving an RV. I'm just saying, I drive across the country. I see it
no
all the
kidding.
Time. I'm just
like, we're like, oh, no.
Now I've got to get a bunch of people yelling at me. But some people are really good at it and some aren't.
Some.
And it really actually doesn't have to do with the age. But it is interesting about this, but I think we are shifting. And so that's got to be something for you as an author is to understand those generational changes. I mean, we... Just even during the pandemic, you know, we start pet sitting. So now we get to kind of be at home while we work and then we off we go do our tourism thing. So we did a lot of bed and breakfast.
Oh, fun.
Now, we stayed in 30 bed and breakfasts in 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to think about a good setting for murder, like Nancy just, she's got this whole thing brewing. Then we ended up running a bed and breakfast for 3 nights.
That was so much fun.
We pet sit.
That would be a dream. I'm just saying that would be a dream. That
yeah, well, come hang out with us in Asheville. The Light and the Rose. We're going
to
be there again in August. And it's so cool because you can welcome guests with a beer because they make mm-hmm. beer there. But we had to clean, cook, serve, do the whole thing. And mm-hmm. so we learned as, you know, going to bed and breakfast back in the day when we heard bed and breakfast. It was, you know, like at grandma's house with the doilies and the dust and the antiques. Well, people still have, some have a few doilies and some have antiques, but there's,
but it's younger.
Majority of the people that are running inns now, they're on their third, second, third, fourth, even career, and want to do something with their partner or love the area. And it's a good way to buy real estate and make it work. And when you go in, it's a whole different experience. And we watched people go to a bed and breakfast for the first time, younger people, mm-hmm. I mean, in their 20s and not know how does this work? I mean, and then being on the other mm-hmm. side, people are like, is breakfast included? I'm like, that's why it's a bed and breakfast. They don't know. And so watching those changes mm-hmm. made me really realize how society has changed just from the bed and breakfast perspective.
Yeah,
so you've got to have to change like that too.
Yeah, I think it's wonderful to see people having so many opportunities because I don't think any of us are one trick ponies.
No.
I think all of us have beautiful talents to share in so many ways. And just because we haven't to this point invested the time to be good at it doesn't mean that we won't be. Mm. It just means we haven't tried it. And again, to Nancy's point, maybe we don't like it when we try it, but
yeah,
just think the way
so do something else.
Absolutely.
You know, I have to say there was a part of me after all the meals were served and everybody's fine with the meals, I just wanted to go out there and go, you have no idea what I put in your waffles.
Oh my gosh. No, okay, maybe I'm not coming to bed breakfast then.
Oh my God, no, but it was so much fun.
No,
but,
just wouldn't it be funny?
Dude, don't do that. No, the paranoia, because there was a honeymoon couple. Oh my God,
paranoia. The stress.
The stress level of, I mean, and cleaning the rooms. I mean,
you don't even need to say it.
You know exactly where I'm going.
Yes, I do, because of what I write. I know exactly where you're going.
So there's like a whole, yeah. So, but this, I wanted to bring this up about having to understand generational changes and not being the one trick pony. We were listening to an NPR recording coming down, or live show, with an author, and I'm going to say his name was Robert Fowler, but I know it's not. And he's a famous author, and I can't remember his name because that's how famous he is. No, he's really cool, but he was talking to kids. And his writing had changed, and he, in school, really sucked in school. When he went to college, he kept going, I don't want to just do this career. I don't want to do that as a career. I'm interested in this. I want to just see. And it dawned on him that writing gave him the opportunity to be different things all the time, and to be able, because he had all these interests. And he goes, I don't want to be a doctor because that's all I'm going to be doing. But as a writer, you could be a doctor for a while. And still keep that growing, and you know, you can do different things. And he just said he realized he had all these interests. So he was talking to these high school kids, and they're asking him questions about going to college, about character development. I was listening to this going, this is super cool. And then we had to get to our destination. I'm like, hey, but you know, but I thought that was, because we identify, I mean, we're the blend, we can't just
make up our minds.
We can't
be stagnant. Yeah.
No, look how many topics we've already talked about. So do you feel that way as a writer? I mean, as different things that you're really interested in that you throw in because you want to investigate it and use it. Kind of like a license to drive a different career for a bit.
Absolutely. And it was funny, somebody was telling me the other day, they said, oh, I liked this one particular character in Dark Obsessions, because I learned so much from this character. And I'm sitting there and I'm listening, you know, actively, because I want to hear her perspective. And at the same time, there's a little person inside of me jumping up and down saying, ooh, I taught people something. That's
cool.
Yeah. So yeah, there's so much of that, and the magic of it, that I get to be a coroner or a mayor of a city.
I want to be a coroner for a day. I totally do, right? Who doesn't want to go and just like, if you pull the toe, is he going to move? Like, to me, I want to see when they cremate a body, if they really move. Like, seriously, there's that whole thing about, don't you want to see it?
I don't know if I want to see it.
I shouldn't put this on air.
No, I attended a Zoom, and it was great. We had a funeral director speaking to us. Again, this is
cool.
Right? Ooh. And he explained things that were so fascinating. I literally filled pages in a notebook, you know, just loving the level of detail that, you know, he was explaining about so many technical things that I don't necessarily want to share with your poor listeners who may not want to hear it, but fascinating things about the reality of these jobs. And one of the things I will share that was cute was, this was up in Sacramento, California, and he was telling a story about, I believe that he had to go and pick a body up in Tahoe, I believe is where it was. And he went up there with the hearse, and there was a crime element to it. So he had to wait for them. And so he was there for quite a while. And as he was driving back, he was really hungry. So he pulled up into fast food in the with the body in the back. And I just thought that, but that's real, funny. Right? That's how life is. There's human beings driving these vehicles, right? They need to eat. And it was just amazing to me, because I'm just imagining the poor kid at the, you know, or the poor adult, whoever it is, who's working at the drive-through window, and being like, oh my goodness, give him his food.
Especially if he orders two of everything.
Yeah, if he orders two of everything, that's exactly where my mind went.
But the guy in the back will have a seven up.
Then he needs a straw because.
So and it's when fascinating.
When they transport the bodies, I mean, at that point, I mean, are they putting it on ice if it's not been embalmed? I mean, that's a whole other thing too.
And that's that whole process as well. That science again. Every time I try to make a scene, I might have a scene in my head and think, oh, this is a great idea, but is it going to work? And,
yeah.
You know,
but you get to go down the rabbit hole anyway.
Yes.
Do you watch a bunch of weird YouTube stuff? Like,
Not so much YouTube specific. I do watch a lot of documentaries. Sometimes I can find them on YouTube, but when I do watch things, I'll watch documentaries. I also try to reach out and interview people. And like you said, Zoom is great now because you can actually see the person instead of just
record it.
Yeah. So that is definitely great. And yeah, I probably have more things floating around in my head that people would be disturbed by than the average person.
But in the coffin,
do they put all those like freezer packs?
Well, you know, it was funny because he was also talking about how his kids sometimes would like hang out and like if they were waiting for him late at work, they'd just like climb into the coffins and rest. No. I couldn't do that. I could not on a bet, on a joke, on anything climb into a coffin. I don't ask me why. I can get into all of these topics and I can put myself in situations and be hands-on, if you will, with certain situations, but for myself, I don't even want, I think I'm more of a cremation girl. I don't think I ever want.
I don't like that either. I don't want to be burned. I don't want to be suffocated.
To me though, if you could film the body getting up in the cremation that's like a ghost thing. So I think that's kind of neat because it proves energy. Like there's something there's a weird thing there that, and they always talk about that 72 hours, you know, when someone dies that their soul is moving and all of that. Like once I get into those kind of things, like I trip out and then people think like, what is she on? And I'm like, it's just really weirdly interesting.
But see, that's why I couldn't do those jobs because I think, is the person still here with me? Like, even if they're not in the body, like, are they watching? Are they going to, like, did I not, you know? Like,
do you, okay, so you would never go to the bathroom.
Like, they went to move their head and it bounced on the table or something. I don't know.
So you wouldn't go to the bathroom in a funeral home, would you?
Ooh.
I don't believe I ever have.
I don't think I would because
do they have bathrooms?
Are they going to see you? You know what I mean?
That's a really good question. Now that's going to add a dimension for me. Thank you.
You're quite welcome.
New dimension.
Oh my gosh.
But the bouncing of the head thing is weird. I mean, is it going to be that heavy? I mean, because you've got to, and then the fluids getting like,
no,
that
stop
whole,
it.
I'm all into that. But
and
anyway,
I know, and the problem for me is I'm not, when I cook, I never wear aprons. So in that job, you'd have to wear an apron. And if I forgot it, just wouldn't be good. It just, yeah.
Well, this conversation went everywhere.
It really did.
So if we missed out.
So who are you going to kill next?
Yeah.
Oh, goodness. We'll have to see. Like I said, Kate is such a vibrant character to me now. Sometimes I'll just think in my head, we'll have little dialogues sometimes. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Kate?
Yeah. I think what's great about this and how you're writing is that it isn't these, right, like we were talking about TV series and how people get typecast, it becomes this template. And like, I can't watch half of those. I could sit and tell you.
You already know what's
going to
happen.
And it's just, and yet people will consume it. It's like fast food almost, right? It's the same thing.
Well, it's a comfort because you know how it's going to end.
Yeah, God, it's just, what a waste of time.
I think it's like fast food, but without the guy with the body in the back.
Yeah, right, yeah. Right, exactly. And you want the guy in the body with the body in
there.
I want the weird stuff in there. I want the quirk. And I think that's where like Netflix started doing better than regular TV was they allowed writers to go and write and get away from the template. And I know at one point writing, I mean, they did it with children's books. Here's your template for a children's book.
Yeah.
And that makes me mad. Actually, because I think children want more than the template. You know what I mean? It's I understand learning from that, but you've got to, it's like, you've got to get off of the automatic focus on your camera. You've got to, you know, take that step beyond. So I understand, it's like learning, you know, your basics, but I don't know.
There's this thing about when
to have a series that isn't a template is so crucial.
Yeah, but
because you do connect with the characters like Kate.
But when you, once you know the rules, then you can break them.
And have.
But if you don't know the rules, then you don't know what you're doing there. So, but once you know the rules, then you can, like, I learned that in painting, that once you knew the composition and the depth of field and all that, once you learn those rules, then you can mess with them.
Yeah.
And then the art still comes out, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And so then all of a sudden there's a coffin in the middle of the painting.
That might happen in my world. Who knows?
You never know.
You never know. Well, thank you so much, Marie. It's always fun having you on the show.
It's Don't always wait another a 5 years. Ladies. Always a blast. Oh,
really, thank you. And I can't wait to read Dark Associations. I mean, Dark Obsessions. Everyone, the first one is Dark Associations. Second one, Dark Obsessions. And so
good.
Yeah, you don't know the next one? Should we not say it? Or
I can say it. It's actually, it's teased at the very end. It's called Dark Reckonings.
Ooh. Oh, dude.
That sounds good.
Reckoning is like, oh boy. That's getting a little
come to
sinister.
Mommy moment.
Yeah. Ooh, little judgment day going on.
See, this is why I love to be here, because you ladies get me.
Yeah, I dig it. I'm all into coffins now.
Oh gosh,
I'm going to be thinking about this for the rest of the day.
I know, we're going to come up with different styles of coffins.
I'm never going to go through a fast food thing the same ever again. It's just not.
I don't think you can. No,
you can't. It's one of those things you can't undo. Like from now, I'm just going to always order for another person, and say ask them in the back. I'm just going to go, what would you like? Oh, you want this? You know.
Well, maybe
that'd be fun.
You do the animal sitting, and you've done B&Bs. Yeah. You've done all these things. Maybe you need to take a turn in the funeral home.
We haven't done a funeral home.
You know what? I would laugh. I'm sorry. I can't do it.
I would do things.
No, I no. I know one funeral when my aunt died. Her
See,
here we go. We're all standing around the grave and they lower the coffin down, and the other aunt's hat flew off and went down on top of the coffin. And then the dude with the shovel just tossed the dirt right on her hat. But who's going to climb down there and get it?
That's probably a good point. And she probably
wanted
it back after that point.
My brother and I just lost it. We thought it was the funniest thing we'd ever seen.
Because
nobody knew what to do.
The graveyard thing is a whole other deal. I'm into that. We went on a paranormal graveyard walk with people. We've done two.
Ooh.
In the last, during COVID, and the one they've got all these apps on their phones, and so they start talking to the graves, and the graves,
that's funny,
and then you hear these voices come back, and I'm like, you're right. One guy swore at the woman, and I'm going, yeah, you're actually being rude to the dead here. And he served, and he's like telling her where to go, and I'm like, wait a minute, this is fun now, I'm into this.
So
there are these apps, and so that say that they can read them talking back, the ghost talking back.
It's weird.
So now there's a whole other thing. And then I'm like, should you be doing this? Should you not? But I love going to graveyards, because that's actually one of the best places to learn history of people. And
they're always fascinating. And I don't know that I, just probably because of the types of things I write, if I didn't know who the person was, I don't know that I'd want to be arguing with them, because I don't know what they're capable of at this point. And if they started out like one of the bad people in my books and now they have other powers, I don't even want to go there.
Oh, I know, but it's cool though. But it's a weird thing. And it's going to graveyards is pretty interesting, and how people leave things, you know, for famous people. And we went to, in Asheville, behind the bed and breakfast where we were, they have Thomas Wolfe, the writer, and O. Henry is there. And so people would leave pennies for O. Henry. Well, then they got the two authors mixed up, and there's pennies for Thomas Wolfe. He didn't do that. But speaking of funerals, his parents, Thomas Wolfe's dad was an undertaker in Asheville. And so he's known for these angel statues, and he would put them out. So like, hello, we're, you know, bring your dead in the window to let people know. And he got known. And so now in this cemetery, they have the little angel statues
all over the place
because of Thomas Wolfe. So wow. He got known as like one of the first funeral guys who were advertising. Next thing you know, well. So Thomas Wolfe's history comes from funerals. And then Ella Fitzgerald lived there, and Scott F. Scott Fitzgerald, and she burned in a loony bin.
Oh my God!
And we went to go find the
But they lived there.
I shouldn't say they lived there on and off. And those two, like, she was had a mental illness, and so she would check her. And I shouldn't call it a loony bin. I'm sorry, but in this facility, and they were doing this. They were zapping her.
Electric shock.
Yeah, and so she would check herself out, and at that time he had passed away, and he would. Be really, it's kind of like a Johnny Depp and Amber Heard situation, the two of them. Except for, I don't know if she did that in his, anyway, I won't go there. So she's waiting next to the kitchen in a holding room to be transferred to the zapping room, and the kitchen, or there was a fire, and so they run up the fire escape. Well, the fire escape is made out of wood. And so they all burned. 9 people out of that facility survived, I think.
You know, you look back at human history and all of the, I mean, how many towns went down and were rebuilt and went down and rebuilt. And God loved these people. They were burning candles at night in their homes.
And it's like all of a sudden, oopsie. Like in the middle of the night, you fall asleep, your candle, and you bonk, there it was. And next thing you know, so I wonder, like, talk about haunting. I mean, these places that burned down, I mean, it's cremation in a way at that point. And so do you not think that they're not hanging out there with their vibes in there? So do you, and you, right. I mean, you pick up the vibes too in places. That's what's cool about where you're going, different settings. You've got to pick up the vibe.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that's important to me when I do write, that setting, and that's why obviously the Olympic Peninsula, the whole Pacific Northwest. Cool.
It's so dramatic.
Fun. Oh yeah, so fun, so many great places to play with. But one of the things that's important for me, lots of times you'll notice in my writing, I try to give little factoids and fun insights into the history of a place, because the place, you know, if you're really going for that goal in your writing where setting becomes a character, you want to flush out the setting, you know, you want to go into all of those things that make it what it is, so that people understand it's not just a place and you put a pin in it. It's kind of a living, breathing element of its own. And I'm sure you ladies know that better than anybody with all the travel you do.
Pet sitting and being part of a community in a neighborhood is a big deal. When we were in El Hueco, we'd walk the dog Ember Ray step. I mean, we were across the street from the firehouse, which actually historically had a fire, and they had to drive the trucks out because the trucks got stuck in the firehouse on fire. But anyway, so we'd walk across the street, go down to the harbor right there, and we're walking a dog, and you're now in a harbor setting. Like, you know, we left Seattle and now we're like in a harbor. Like, this is a whole different thing. And that whole area, and we did the Redwood Coast all the way up here, and you forget all the sea memorials, for the people who lost their lives in shipwrecks in World War II. I mean, there was all these different things and parts of boats and anchors and all this, and you get these memorials there, and there's a really sobering feeling about people dying on these cliffs in the ocean, this hard, dramatic sea. And then you see the people getting on the boats, and there's all these statues of women everywhere, of them holding the lantern out for the men coming in historically. And it's just like, wow, okay, this is like a whole different thing. And as a tourist, you can pick it up, but really living in the community for a bit is like this whole other life. And
whole level of connection, right?
It really, really is. I mean, I tell Nancy, we're going to write a book on how people get rid of trash across the country. Some places burn it. Some places, you know, everything is recycled. It's a different thing.
And so, some people just leave their sofas in the desert.
Yes, they do.
You know, I think there's just some people who want to leave things everywhere.
Yeah. I will tell you, in the desert, Nancy and I went for a walk, and it's in a sub community. But there, you know, big, you know, vacant spaces of desert, and we're walking in the morning, and this was during the lockdown of COVID, and we found a shovel. Mm-hmm. So we walked back to our friend's house, and she's retiring from being an innkeeper too, and we come walking back to her, and we're like, we found a shovel
something
in the desert,
and
then she's looking at. But on our way through, we come out of the desert and into the subdivision, and there's a lady walking her dogs, and I'm here, like,
with and a I'm shovel. Like,
You know what? That's the opening scene for my next book. Yeah. Walk out of the desert with a shovel.
I know. It's so big.
And I'm like, and it was brand new.
Yeah.
And so we gave it to
our friend Jim.
And it was brand new. And I'm like, and all I could think is, what if I'm touching like
a murder weapon,
a crime thing, and this girl with the dogs, and the dogs are all like, oh, I want to see. And I'm like, I swear it is not how it looks. And we get to our friend Jerry, and she gave it to her landscaper guy, and he got a new shovel. And she's like, that's like a $30, $40 shovel. I'm like, really? I don't know. But there it is.
Well, just
it was a big
make
shovel.
Sure you monitor TV for that area for the next few years, because if something comes up, you never know.
That's going to be the shovel-nosed killer.
Very well could be. That is
shovel-nosed killer.
I would have been the same place. Like I said,
would you have taken out of the desert? I would have. I mean, I did,
but honestly, because I am who I am, I might have like been like, should I report this?
Yeah, because it's
weird. Just to see what they said. Yeah, just to check
like,
it out.
Why is the shovel here? And then we walked around and we're like, I'm like, I want to see if there's like a grave, like a little mound of sand, because what's up with this? And we couldn't find anything. So we're like, okay. But who just drops a shovel in the desert? I don't get it.
I don't get it either. And on the worst case scenario, you find a body. On the best case scenario, you find $100 million in cash.
Oh, ooh, we got to go back.
Okay. Well, Jerry's sister always finds cash when she goes in the desert. Wherever she walks, she finds cash, rings, you name it.
Ooh, maybe she's the shovel lady.
You need to bring her luck with you.
Well, if we find anything weird again, we'll call you.
Yes.
You know. I'll fly out. I'll meet you down there.
Cool. I'll give you a shovel. Everyone, again, Marie Sutro, and go to our website, mariesutro.com. The book is out now, Dark Obsessions, the follow-up to Dark Associations. And also keep up with us at bigblendradio.com. Thank you so much for joining us. What a fun conversation.
Thank you, ladies. It was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you.